This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Hello and good day, boys and girls. A warm welcome. Thank you for stopping by and taking some time off today to listen to Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik, and we're coming to you from Scandinavia. I hope you're doing all right in these interesting times, wherever you are. RedIceCreations.com and RedIceMembers.com, our websites. Line up for you today. We are talking with Santos Bonacci. For over 30 years, he has been researching the ancient works, compiling and translating them into more accessible terms in his study of astrotheology. Santos lives in Melbourne, Australia. He is a producer of video lectures and special DVDs and presents regular seminars on demand. He returns today to discuss the holy science. In the first hour, he'll explain how astrotheology is the basis and origin for all our myths, legends, fairy tales, nursery rhymes, and folklore. He also talks about how it is the pure science developed by the very enlightened, wise, and ancient priesthood that gives us the holy books of all religions. This language was eventually veiled in allegory and symbolism, and much of it was deliberately done to keep the higher truths from the masses. Stay with us to learn more. All right, Santos, welcome back to Red Ice Radio. It's good to talk to you again. You've certainly been busy. It's almost exactly a year since we last talked with you. How have you been, Santos?
Very well, thanks. Very well.
Excellent. And you've been keeping busy. You're doing videos. You've been doing more presentations and talks on the subjects and matters that you dive into. For a while, you had a radio show there as well. And as far as I understand it, you're currently not doing the show anymore, radio show?
No. I was doing a few shows. There was TNS from Ireland. There was Scottish. There was TCT, These Changing Times, also from Great Britain. American Freedom Radio and Oracle Network.
A lot.
But I found that after a while it was taking too much time away from my research, because you have to – you know, you have to look for good guests to get on, to talk with, and it's time-consuming, etc. So it was a big responsibility I thought I could do without and concentrate on research.
Well, believe me, I know it's a lot to deal with, just keeping up with bookings, actually. People might not understand that, but start your own website and radio show and you'll understand that it's
exactly
a lot to deal with, you know. No, but that's really good. So what are, I mean, your main work has been on Roman law, ecclesiastical law. We talked about that last time. Astrotheology is one of the big ones, and I hope to get further in that into that subject today as well. What are some of the areas you felt that you were kind of missing out on, and some of the areas you wanted to return to in your research, Santos?
Well, the most important part of astrotheology and syncretism, which is what I'm doing, syncretism shows how everything, all the theologies, the philosophies, the religions, the sciences, they are all one. And this is the science of doing this, you see, syncretism. And the people from the Renaissance were doing this. Marsilio Ficino, Giovanni Pico della Mirandola, Giordano Bruno, all these guys. And so I'd like to focus on the microcosm portion of this.
Tell us a little bit more about that. What does that mean specifically? I mean, religious syncretism, as you said, is about noticing the how they are compare. They're based on previous mythology. We'll get into that a little bit too. But tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, well, you see, what you find when you look at the ancient texts, the Bhagavad Gita, the Bible, etc., you find that the theme is exactly the same, and especially to the ones who have insight, you see, the exoteric knowers rather than the exoteric believers. You see, they've been kept in the dark, in the lurch. But the secret of secrets is the grand arcanum, which is hiding in these texts. It's the magnum opus that the philosopher has been looking for, the elixir of life, etc. And it all has to do with the microcosm. Of course, what else could it be? You see, in the Bible, in the Bible is the story of the microcosm of the man and how man was created. And it literally is. It's a literary masterpiece. There is nothing historical of historical import in the Bible of significance. There's some threads of historicity in the Bible, but that was done, you know, that was done post-mortem. You know, that was done in hindsight, retrospect. And that was done by clever people, you see. But in the Bible, there is only one story, and that is the story of the creation of man and how man is the temple of what they call God, or the temple of Solomon, you see. Solomon's temple was not built with hands, with hammer or saw, or the sound of hammer or saw. And Solomon's temple, the grand architect was Hiram, you see, Hiram. We'll get back to that.
Yeah.
But the temple is the body, you see, and this is how it works. This is how the temple is built. It's built on the principle of 12, because the universe is built on 12. Everything the universe does, it does through the number 12. 12 is the completeness of its cycles, you see. The human body must correspond to the universe because man is the measure of the universe.
Or do you believe that we're an outcome of the universe? We're created in the image of the universe, and therefore our patterns, as you say, our ratios as the human body as we measure it, have this incorporated into it?
Yes. Yes. Exactly. So the ancients knew that there was a circle in the sky. And that circle was traversed by the seven wanderers, the sun and the moon, the two luminaries, and the five visible planets, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. And these seven regulated that path in the sky that they blazed called the ecliptic. The ecliptic is the extension of the equator of the Earth. And they got that line of 360 degrees and they segmented it into 30 degrees because they knew that that's how the universe gets things done. It does things in 12s.
Yeah.
And we have to understand numerology and the power of the numbers. What does 1 mean? What does 2 mean? What does 3 mean? Now, I'll get back to that. But what they did, the ancients, is they knew that this Temple of Solomon was made of 12 parts, and the parts are these. Aries, the ram, is at the top of the head. Everything starts with Aries in this great science, you see. The great science of astrology. Aries is the first, the number one. Then there's Taurus, number two. And those two houses or signs of the zodiac are in the head. Aries is at the top of the head and it corresponds with the cerebrum. And Taurus is at the bottom of the head and the neck and it corresponds with the cerebellum. So you have the higher mind or the higher brain and you have the lower mind or the lower brain. Now, we'll get back to the meanings of those words, cerebrum and cerebellum, because hiding in those two words is the word Israel. Israel is in your head, and it consists of the two brains, the cerebrum and the cerebellum. Okay, so we'll get back to that.
Okay.
But in astrology, these two portions were attributed to Aries, the lamb, and Taurus, the bull. Now, in order, descending from the top of the head, in order, After Taurus, you have Gemini, the two arms. Cancer is next, the breast. Leo is next, the heart. Then below that is Virgo, the belly. Below that is Libra, the two kidneys, the scales. The scales of balance, the two kidneys. And in Latin, kidneys are reins. Reins. And the reins of a bridle of a horse. Mm. And when you balance the reins of the horse, you have equilibrium. Equilibrium comes from equus, the horse. So here you have the kidneys representing the scales of Libra. Below that, Scorpio, the generative area. Below that, Sagittarius, the hips, because hips comes from hippo, the horse, Sagittarius. Below that, you have Capricorn, the knees, the kneecaps. Below that, you have Aquarius. And then the final part of this temple are the two fish, Pisces. Now, Josephus, Philo, Judaeus, all of these great Jewish scholars from thousands of years ago tell you that that is how Solomon's temple was made. It was made in 12s. There were 12 loaves of bread.
Now, there were sorry to interrupt, Santos, but I'm really glad you brought up that point, because I wanted to ask you a little bit about Titus Flavius Josephus, the Jewish scholar who was basically adopted into the Flavian dynasty. I don't know if you're aware of the work of Joseph Atfield, for instance, who talks about the Flavian signature and the fact that the Bible, or Jesus in that regard, was invented by the Flavians, basically, as a political thing. Now, that doesn't exclude, and you can comment on that as well, certainly, but that doesn't exclude, just as you've been talking about now, that there is a message within the text. That doesn't mean that they didn't go into this esoteric teaching, as you say, to also disseminate it at the same time, to spread the word. And one quirk, if that's the case then, is at the same time as they were trying to deceive, if you will, with the Bible, if that is the true intention of it, they also took the opportunity to then teach with it and teach people this knowledge that you're talking about, that it is incorporated into the Bible. And that's kind of a schism. What's your stance on that, Santos?
Yeah, spot on. Joseph Atwill has done a great job exposing what the Flavians did, and Josephus, who was supposedly the Apostle Paul, and a few other characters. But, see, these people were the only ones who were able to sort of publish books, the rich and the well-to-do, and you see, so they conspired to do this. Now, they put the last finishing touches on the Gospels to literalize them. Rome came to make them, to pin them down into history, you know, so to speak. And of course, later on, Eusebius put his touches on it. Then later on, you've got Francis Bacon with the King James Version, yep. And the Jesuits were also cooking the books on the continent. And of course, now you've got some very, very wealthy elite families that are also cooking the history books. So it's happening all the time. You know, and it did begin with the Flavians. It absolutely did. And they put their touches. Justinian also did a lot of damage. His wife had reincarnation removed from the Bible in the year 530 something. And so they've been at it, because when you doctor the books and you change their true message, and you overlay it with historical facts and things to blur out the true beautiful message that is at the bottom of it, you do that for control, so that the people do not know the true riches of the wisdom that's in these scriptures. And I'm uncovering those true riches that are in the Bible. And you have to understand that the Bible is the greatest astrological treatise in the history of this planet. It is the one and only. It's astrology at its best, and it's pure astrology, and I'm going to show that today. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So you see, this is how Solomon's temple was apportioned. But the story of the human organism is thread through these beautiful, rich stories that the Jews and the Christians gave us. And this is the story that they knew that the cerebrum was the place where a fluid was produced which would descend from the claustrum, the Santa Claustrum, and it would descend from there and it would in the third ventricle, it would be differentiated by the pineal gland and the pituitary gland into a positive and a negative fluid. And they would descend down the spinal cord, the ida and the pingala nerve, and they would go all the way down to the sacrum. And these oils that were produced in the cerebrum, you see, in embryology, the cerebrospinal system is the first fully developed of the 12 systems that make this temple of Solomon, the soul of man. And so Ares, the ram, the cerebram, is the first organ in the body, and it produces the rest of the body. And the oil that is produced from there, it's called the seed. You see, Ceres, in the word cerebrum, means seed or wax. It's a neutral wax, and it gets differentiated. And but this neutral wax or this seed, this is the seed that makes the corpuscles, that makes the blood, that makes the whole organism, you see. And
there's medical knowledge incorporated into the wording as well. It's multi-layered. That's what you're saying here.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But the bottom layer is this, what's known as the mystery. You see, the Apostle Paul in Colossians 1:26 and 27 said, "The sacred secret that was kept from the nations, I hereby declare to you, of the Christ within you."
Mm-hmm.
You see? So he was talking about the sacred secret. Remember, the cerebrum makes a sacred secretion. And the word secret is hiding in the word secretion. And the fluid that comes from this secretion must descend all the way down to the sacrum. And that part is the sacred, you see, where Scorpio is, the generative area. And so the secret is above and the sacred is below. This is the sacred secret of the Christ in you. Now, this is how marvelous this temple is. Every month when the moon transits your sun sign, there is a psychophysical germ planted in the solar plexus. The solar plexus is known as Bethlehem, Virgo. Virgo is the belly, you see. So this is why this psychophysical germ that is planted there every month is called the son of a virgin. This is the seed, the Christ that is born every month in our wombs, the solar plexus. And so if we are able to raise this fluid by abstaining from the lusts and the vices and the things which cause the oils to descend and stay down at the bottom of the sacrum rather than ascending, we produce a condition of acid in the body, and that acid is an enemy of this oil, this fluid which flows from the cerebrum. And when this oil is totally consumed, we die. That's the cause of death in the human organism. You see, this is why old people, they dry up, they wither up, they wrinkle up, and then their organs cease to function. This is because the oil has been burnt up.
You know what? Recently, I heard this, that there was like the, it's when the main mucous membrane, if you will, of the body, and this might be the same thing that you talk about. That's when that gets damaged or drained out. Basically, that's when also sickness can set in. So maybe it's the same kind of thing there we're talking about.
Yep. It's the they are the holy juices. In fact, the name for this secretion is the fish. In Greek, the oil is called the Christos, the Christ. It is called the seed, the manna from heaven, the soma juice. It's all those things, because once the oil goes through the chakras and the plexuses along the cerebrospinal system, finally it reaches the top of the medulla oblongata, where it crosses the pneumogastric nerve. The pneumogastric nerve, otherwise known as the vagus nerve, is the nerve, or it's called in esoteric wisdom, the tree of life. And it's the tree of life because the vagus system, which comes from vagrant, because you see it wanders through the body, it feeds the lungs and the liver and the spleen and the kidneys and the heart with these vital fluids, the oil, the Christ. And so once the oil crosses where the vagus nerve crosses the medulla oblongata, the Christos gets crucified. Crucified means to vibrate 1,000-fold more. And so now this oil is vibrating at such a high rate that it smears the optic thalamus. The optic thalamus is the light of the world in the Greek system. The light of the world. Yeah. And once this happens, after 3 days, the pineal gland is activated, and the pineal gland now produces a new fluid or a new substance, and this is called the blood of the Christ. And this is the blood of the Christ that forgives, you see. This is why the scriptures say that the blood of Christ forgives us. Because what happens is the new blood is able to purify the blood. It's able to purify all the diseases. And this is how one is able to live forever. Well, so this process...
Sorry again to interrupt, but that's just what I was thinking about, the anointing process, right? This is the oil and the eternal life, and we have this, the tradition of being anointed in, again, syncretism, so many traditions, even kings to this day are anointed, and it's in the Hebrew tradition, the Indian tradition, so it goes on and on from there. Very interesting how this sticks together.
Yeah, and so you see, this is how Solomon's temple was built by the ram. The ram is the first and corresponds to the number one. Taurus is the second and corresponds to the number two. This is why in astrology, Taurus is the second house, is equivalent to Taurus, and it represents wealth because it represents a doubling, an increase. You see, you go from one in Aries to two to Taurus. And then when you go to the third house, you're in the house of your brothers, and that's Gemini, you see. When the sun is transiting the 30 degrees of Gemini, he is with his brothers, you see. So in your chart, the third house will represent your brothers.
Hmm.
And then the fourth house represents the home, because Cancer, the crab, she's the homely one, but she also is the number four. And the number four is an enclosure, you see. It's a house. It's a place where it's a shape that you can go into, etc., etc. So I wasn't going to get into the houses, but that's how the houses work. The houses go by numbers. It all goes by numerology. Everything goes by those numbers, and you start at Aries.
So we could go on and touch upon 5, 6, etc., and there is correspondence there in the science as well?
Yes, absolutely. If we've got time, I'll finish that. But yeah. I do want to make sure I focus on Aries and Taurus, because the most two sacred animals in our mythologies and in cosmology are the lamb and the bull. Everywhere you go, if you go to Egypt along the Nile, you will see rams all the way to the temples. You have colonnades of rams, and you always have the bull, Hathor. Hathor is everywhere. You go to India, there's the bull. The Italians, Italy comes, it is, one theory is that Italia comes from Vitalia, which is the bull, the calf, because they were known as bull worshippers, Mithras.
That's right.
Mithras was there, exactly. The Persians had the bull. And so these two animals, why? Why these two animals? Well, it's because they are the two brains in the head, the lower brain and the higher brain. You see, this is why the builder of the temple is Ares. The seed comes from there. Ceres, cerebrum, means seed, and brum means neutral. But it also, if you look at brum, B-R-U-M, and you change the U to an A, you have Bram, and that is Abram.
Yeah.
Father Ram. You see, and does not the Bible say that Abraham is the father of Israel? He is the father of the Israelites.
That's right. Hiram, as you mentioned before, ties into this, I guess.
Exactly. Hiram. Go to Wikipedia. It tells you Hiram means high born. When you go to India, if you have Rama in your name, it means you are high born. You are of the high caste. And this is why the Brahmins, the Brahminians, they are the high caste because they have the ram. They are in the higher mind. They are not the bull worshippers, the common bull worshippers. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And this is why, yeah. And you see, so, and you get the word Brahma, and that's just an anagram of Abraham, you see? And the wife of Brahma was Saraswati. The wife of Abraham was Sara. And Sara is the moon, you see. And she is, the moon is in Taurus. The moon exalts in Taurus and the sun exalts in Aries. So Aries is about the sun. Hmm. Taurus is about the moon. And this is Abraham and Sarah. This is Isaac and Rebecca. Jacob and Rachel and Leah. Now, so Abraham, the father, you see, the Bible says, and to your seed I will give the world. To your seed, out of your loins will come many, many nations. Because, you see, the seed is the ram. Of course, everyone that exists on this planet comes from the seed, which came from the ram, Aries.
So we're not talking about the literal character Abraham here. This is a bigger story being told.
Yeah, it's the story. It's the inner story of the temple within, how the ram is the father and produces all seed in the body.
Yeah.
Because it's the first gland developed. Mm. And it rules, Aries rules the body, you see. So, and the Muslims have Ramadan.
That's right.
You see, and Ramazan. They're great festivals. And then, of course, in the Bible, it says, in Rama there was weeping. I heard Rachel's voice, and she was weeping for her children, for they are no more. That's because Rama is weeping because none of the oil has been returned. You see, people have lost their way, and they're living riotously in that they are partaking of sensation and emotion and lust and vice and avarice, and they are just materialistic. They are materialistic like the bull below, and they are bull-headed because the cerebellum, bellum means war in Latin. And that bull brain, the bullish brain, is at war with the high brain. When you go to the Sistine Chapel and you see Michelangelo's God and his extending his hand out to Adam, that's the two hemispheres of, that's the two brains. That's the superconscious and the subconscious. And that's God, the ram, saying, please, please, my little children, repent and come unto me. If only you would practice good deeds and purify your bodies, you will be able to ascend. Ascension happens within, you see. And this is the story. And because, you see, the Christ turns water into wine. That's what happens. That's what happens when the pineal gland receives that oil and it produces the new substance called the blood of the Christ, which heals us. You see, that blood activates the dormant brain cells in the cerebrum. There are millions and millions of dormant brain cells. That's how our body is made. But it was also designed for us to practice this science of ascension and to return the oil and practice tithing and go back to the lamb. You see, Jesus was the lamb, the cerebrum. Abram was the ram, the cerebrum. And Moses was also the ram, So you've got all the characters in astrology and in the Bible lining up for the same roles. How do we know Moses was the cerebrum? Well, because Moses is Mars. And Mars means water, just like Moses means water. And when you go to Rome and you go to the museum at the Vatican, I believe it is, you will see Moses, Michelangelo's Moses, and he has two horns on his head.
Definitely, yeah. Looked at that many times. So I wondered, why is that? What does those horns mean right there?
Yeah, because that's the ram. Moses blows the ram's horn, and he reaches Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai is the cranium. See, heaven is in the body along the spinal cord, the distance between heaven and hell. You see, heaved up place is what heaven means. It's heaved up. And that's why the human being standing erect has his head up in the heavens, you see, because he must ascend to the heavens. He has been given this posture, this godly posture. This is the temple of Amun, you see.
Only one who can look, well, animals can do it too, but as you say, just the capability of looking up at the stars, standing erect like that, it's unique if we look around in the animal world.
It is unique. Marcus Manilius, the great astrologer to Caesar Augustus, 2,000 years ago said that man separates himself from the beast because he looks upwards and he notices the stars and he sees their reflection and he wonders what they are.
Yeah.
Because where he comes from now, he is returning. And you see, this is the story that's in the scriptures. The story wants us to be Christ's, to be christened with that beautiful juice that baptizes the cerebrum and returns back to the Lamb.
How does that, maybe we can talk a little bit more about that, because that's very interesting. Now, are you saying that this is on a cycle then within the body, so we can catch this cycle at regular intervals, or is this something that we produce ourselves depending on our own intention, focus, meditation, etc.?
Yeah, no, that is something that will come naturally if the temple is pure. You see, this is why Jesus, the literary character of the Gospels, the hero Jesus, cleans the temples, you see, of the money changers. That's the body. That's the Christ oil ascending and saying, no, I will have no more of these passions, no more of this greed and this materialism. Materialism is what is destroying this oil and its ascension. And this beautiful temple is made in such a way that it will ascend naturally and automatically. But we are the ones that need to keep the body, the temple, pure, because what we're doing is we're putting pollutants into the body, such as food.
Yeah, that's right. Well, so-called food, right, in these times.
Yeah, exactly. We're putting dead food in there. There's such a thing as processed food. I don't know why anyone would ever eat it, but they do. You know, you go to the shopping center and people have got their grocery baskets full of processed cans and boxes and things of processed food. This is food that has no light.
And it's not this alive, it's dead, as you say, as well. Processed the crap out of it, to be blunt.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
So what does that do to the body? It shuts it down. You can't produce the oil you're talking about. Your mucous membrane again shuts down. Your body gets basically busy, your immune system, with fighting with the things you put into it instead of actually ascending, as you say, correct?
Yeah. What we're doing is we are consuming that oil. It's being burnt up. The oil produces all the fluids. It produces semen. You see, remember we said that the oil was called the fish? It's also called salt. Now, if you'll notice, your bodily fluids will either taste like salt or smell like fish. Yeah. And this is why the substance, the sacred salt or the fish, is so sacred. Salvation, which comes from salt, is the main theme of the Bible. Salt is the main theme of the Bible. You are the salt of the earth.
Yeah.
Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt. See, the 12 disciples of Jesus, they happen to be the 12 mineral salt, the inorganic mineral salt. And these are their names. And they start with Aries, with potassium phosphate. I'm going to go from Aries all the way through to Pisces, and I'll name the 12 pillars of health.
All right.
These are the Schussler cell salts. Potassium phosphate for Arians. Sodium sulfate for Taurians. Potassium chloride for Geminians. Calcium fluoride for Cancerians. Magnesium phosphate for Leos. Potassium sulfate for Virgoans. Sodium phosphate for Librans. Sodium chloride for Scorpios. Silica for Sagittarians. Calcium phosphate for Capricorns. Sodium chloride for Aquarians. And iron phosphate for Pisceans. And these are the salts. You see, the fluid is made of these salts, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the salt ascends back to the pineal gland, as we showed, it needs to climb, and as it climbs, it increases its vibration and gets crucified under the optic thalamus. Well, what happens is, as this fluid ascends and it changes its vibration, and then once reaches the cranium, whence it came, it lights up the dormant brain cells, and this and the adept, the hierophant, shows a halo. You see, this is why they depicted all these saints with halos, because halo comes from halos, which is the Greek word for salt.
Hmm.
And if you haven't noticed yet, that hello and salutations are the same thing.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one. Well, is this realization that you had, Santos, is this something you've had yourself as you looked at the minerals and the salts and all this, or is it a reference in other literature that you've came across?
George Carey is the writer that has exposed this inner story of the gospel within, or the story of biochemistry and how physical regeneration is the story that's in the Bible.
That's incredible. I've never heard that before. Thank you for that piece of info. That's incredible, actually.
Yeah, George Carey and his writer and friend is called, Inez Eudora Perry, and they wrote a book called Zodiac and the Salts of Salvation. That would be highly recommended for the listeners. And the other one that will be highly recommended for the listeners is God-Man, the Word Made Flesh. And there are other great writers. There are hundreds that I have in my collection alone.
Sure.
And they have exposed this. Manly P. Hall has exposed this many times. All of his literature is talking about the microcosm and how the story of the gospel is the story of the gospel within. You see, and as the sun faithfully and truly goes through the ecliptic every year and every day, it also faithfully and truly goes through our bodies, you see. This is why the science of astrology has been restricted, and it has been demonized and outlawed, you see, because when you know what it means to have the sun, for instance, placed in Aries, and you're born under the sign of Aries, say, for instance, like myself, the 24th of March. So I'm Arian. I'm born with the sun in my cerebrum, you see. And the people that come after me, the Taurians, they are so different to me. They are so different. You see, these people are earthy. This is the fixed earth sign. They are not like the cardinal fire Arians, you see. And they have a totally different way of a modus operandi in their life. You see, they have the senses activated, whereas Arians have the intuition activated. You see, and by the way, I said to you at the start that Israel is in the head. Well, cerebrum, and cerebellum. Ceres is Isis, You can even do a quick superficial check on Wikipedia to confirm that. Brahm is Abram, and in that word is hiding Ra. That's Ra. So you've got Isis, Ra, and El. The cerebellum, Bellum. Bel is the bull. Bel is Baal, the beautiful one. You see, in Italian, when you say bello, oh, tu sei bello. Well, that means you are beautiful, because Baal was beautiful. And Baal, yeah, and Baal is El, the cerebellum.
Bella, white or fair as well, right, in some languages, Bel?
Yes, yes, absolutely. In French, they say beau, and this is where you get beautiful. Beautiful comes from beau, but beautiful is beau in English, and beau is Bel, it's the sun. Of course it's the sun. It can never be anything other than the sun. But there you have the mother and the father and the son, or the father and the son and the Holy Spirit. There is the Trinity in the cerebrum and the cerebellum. Mm. And these two, yeah, and these two are the difference between the lower-minded people of the herd and the crowd. You see, these people who are quite happy to march off into wars and kill other people, you see, they're doing this because they're still in service to the bull. They've made an idol of the bull. You see, Moses, Aries, he climbed Mount Sinai right to the top of the head, and when he went back down the mountain and he saw the people of the children of Israel making a golden calf out of the bull, they were making a statement that they were not ready to ascend Mount Sinai like Moses. I was saying, Moses, you can stay up there with your God and your tablets and then whatever other fancy things you found up there, but we're staying down here. And we've got this bull, you see, we've turned it into gold, and Aaron made this bull for us. Because what they were doing was making a statement that they were not prepared to ascend, and they were making an idol of the bullish, materialistic brain.
And there was debauchery pretty much going on there. There were all other rituals, and therefore, is this also the sign that's then associated with the lower chakras? As you said before, you have a battle between your upper chakra, the head or the crown, and the lower chakra or your root chakra system.
Yeah, it's considered to be a battle, but it's not really. It's about learning the science of ascending from the bottom chakras and having such a necessity to be greedy and materialistic and want power over other people and control and to practice vices and lust and sensation and emotion. Because the ascended master, the philosopher has slain the dragon. King George has slain the dragon. The dragon is down in Scorpio. You see, Scorpio is the generative area, the sacrum, remember?
Mm-hmm, yep.
The fluid descends down the caduceus. By the way, caduceus means to fall, to descend.
Mm.
So when Mercury holds the caduceus, he's holding the two cerebrum, the wings on top of the two cerebrum, and the staff is the spinal cord, and the ida in the pingala are the two serpents intertwined on that staff. And they are the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And the staff is the tree of life. You see, the cerebrospinal system and all the nerves, the sympathetic nerves and the motor nerves, this is the tree of life. This is the fully developed tree of life in the Garden of Eden. Eden is the cranium. It's where Aries, the lamb, and the bull are, you see. And so, but mostly in the cranium because, see, when the Israelites cross the Red Sea, they're crossing the corpus callosum from the left brain to the right brain. You see, they want to go from the left sinister brain, which is sin. Sinister comes from sin, you see. Sin comes from sinister. And the left brain is where logic and reason occur. It's the male brain, and it's domineering. And it doesn't have any intuition at all. Intuition is the right brain,
right?
You see. And so the Israelites worshipping the bull are connected to that left brain, you see. And see, that's the bull, El, Allah. And so in order to be saved and go to the Garden of Eden or the Promised Land, they must cross the corpus callosum. And this is the Red Sea into the Promised Land. And but the only thing that's crossing people is that they're making an image of the golden calf, you see. So they hold back. They hold back from climbing up Mount Sinai like Moses, Mars did, Mars being the ruler of Aries and yeah. Venus being the ruler of Taurus, you see.
Yeah.
And this is the story that we find in all of our nursery rhymes. Jack and the Beanstalk, the same as Jacob and his ladder. Jacob is Jack.
Yeah.
And Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, the sun and the seven helpers, the 7 days of the week, the seven refracted colors of the rainbow. Snow White is the sun. There is nothing more white and pure as that orb. Little Red Riding Hood, that's the sun. When she goes down at sunset, the scales of Libra are always sitting there. And I'll get back to that and I'll explain that, because this is another very important link for you to understand the system,
mm-hmm. yeah.
the theology that came down to us. It's called the Prisca Theologia. You see, the Prisca Theologia, the ancient theology. And it's been corrupted these days. But you see, when Little Red Riding Hood, she goes down at sunset, she turns red, and in Libra, in the scales of Libra, where the sun is just judged, one of the deacons of Libra is the wolf of the night. And another deacon of Libra is the cross, the southern cross. That's where the sun, the Christ, gets crucified. And the other deacon of Libra is the crown of thorns, Corona Borealis. So you see, you have the crown of thorns that Christ gets crucified at sunset. You have the wolf, the sacrificial victim, and the wolf of night, where the sun must be judged and go down into the darkness.
Hmm.
And see, this is the system that they gave us. Aries always starts at sunrise at 6 a.m. at the equinox, March the 21st.
And it's spring, really, right? It's the first when regeneration begins, or you know, pre-summer, basically, it's when growth begins.
Exactly. So Aries occupying March the 21st when the blossom occurs. The blossom is the cerebellum, you see.
Yeah.
The blossom is the fact that the year begins there. It marks its beginning days with the blossom. That is the beginning of the year. The days of Lent have finished, because the sun, when it's below, before March the 21st, the nights are longer and the days are shorter. Therefore, Lent is the word for lengthening, you see.
Mm-hmm.
The days are lengthening until finally the sun reaches March the 21st, the equinox, and rises at 6 a.m. and sets at 6 p.m. Only one day in the year does it do that, at March the 21st, and also it does that at September the 21st, the autumnal equinox. So, the ancients knew that Aries ruled from 6 to 8 a.m. every day. Taurus rules from 8 to 10 every day. Gemini, 10 to 12. Cancer, 12 to 2. Leo, 2 to 4. The roar of the lion, the hottest part of the day. Virgo, 4 to 6. And then Libra, the scales of justice, are there at 6 a.m. every day. Every day at 6 a.m. when the sun goes into those scales to be judged, there she is, ruling from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. That dark, dark evening light, you see. And then Scorpio rules 8 to 10, Sagittarius 10 to 12, Capricorn midnight, Saturn. Saturn kicks in at midnight. Saturn is the naughty boy. he rules from 2 to 4. From 12 to 2 in Capricorn and from 2 to 4 in Aquarius every night.
Mm.
And then Pisces is the last rulership from 4 to 6. And this is the established heavens that were given us by the Hermetic philosophers, from Mercurius Trismegistus himself, all the way down through Pythagoras, Plato, Plutarch, Porphyry, Plotinus, I'm mentioning all the P's here for some reason. Funny about that. Proclus, Iamblichus, Ammonius Saccas, all of these guys, Boethius, Hypatia, all the way to Giordano Bruno. In the Renaissance, there was Marsilio Ficino, who I've already mentioned, Giovanni Pico della Mirandola, who went down to Rome with his 900 theses 30 years before Martin Luther, and he posted his 900 theses, but history doesn't like to tell you about that because he challenged the Pope and the Cardinals, the Apostolic Senate, to a debate, proving that syncretism was the one and only religion of all time. It always has been, it always will be, and it will return when the Catholic Church ceases to exist.
So they're like the gatekeepers of the knowledge and keeping it within the exoteric realm, if you will, instead of the esoteric. And the Alexandrians, you know, I think Josephus had a lot of contact with these in Egypt, the Alexandrian school, because as you say, as you bring up these names, Santos, these are people who it comes from somewhere before. And are you of the same tradition that we need to go back to Egypt to look at the beginning of this? Can we even go further? Some people do tie it back to Atlantean times and all that as well, because Solon and you know, the stories that we get from Plato and so forth. Are you in the same opinion there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, this science just is. It wasn't formulated like the history books like to tell us, but with the Sumerians and the Chaldeans and the Egyptians 3,000 to 4,000 years ago. That is a crock. And they teach this rubbish because they don't want people to understand the universal religion is science, and it's based on 12, the principle of 12. So let's go back, shall we, to the houses of astrology, you see, because I've made a claim that all sciences, all of them, there is not one that is not included. They're all invited. All of them are one, and they must all syncretize, and they are all syncretized in the Priscoteologia. You see, one is Aries, the ram. That's why the motto for Aries is I am. Arians are self-contained. Arians are concerned about their uniqueness. They live the number one. They are never, rarely are they divided. Rarely are they divided. They are innocent like lambs, and they get taken advantage of by the other signs, because usually they speak truth. And it's very hard for an Arian to be deceptive. Of course, there are bad Arians, like there are good and bad of all the other signs.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but the virtues of the Arian is the lamb, you see. And then the ram is where the vices come in. But also where the lamb is the wolf, you see. So the canine belongs in Aries. In fact, in Chinese astrology, the dog is Aries, you see, so they've placed the dog there, you see, and so you have the wolf and the lamb. But the lamb aspect of Arians is their oneness, you see, they butt with their head. They are head-butting rams, you see, because they believe in oneness, you see. The Taurians, on the other hand, two. All of a sudden you have an increase of doubling, which does not occur throughout the rest of the numbers from 1 through 12. Only in from Aries to Taurus do you have a doubling. You see, two, the positive virtues of two are the principle of doubling. The negative aspects of two are division. This is why you have Adam and Even. Adam is the atom. The atom is the unit. The unit is the one. And that is Adam, you see, the atom.
Yeah.
Eve is the even numbers, you see. Even is two. And so you've got odd numbers and even numbers, you see. And this is why Eve is evil, because she evens things out and she divides. You see, all the even numbers can be divided straight down the middle. Four becomes two lots of two. Six are two lots of three. Eight are two lots of four. Whereas the odd numbers, they are more cohesive, and you can't separate them down the middle, you see.
Mm.
Yeah, so they are uniting, you see, and this is why Eve is evil, because of her evening abilities. Yeah, and so then you have three, And you have the house of brothers when the sun is with his two brothers, Pollux and Castor. And, of course, Mercury rules that, so it's the sign of I think, whereas Taurus is the sign of I have. See, the materialistic jump from oneness and just being, I am, means to be. So you go from this being state to this greedy state of having things, you see. And then Gemini is thinking, right, the house of brothers. And then you go to Cancer. Cancer is four. Four is the square on which you build your house, you see. And the crab is the mother, ruled by the moon, and the moon is known to be the mother, you see. And she governs the menstrual cycle, the cycle of the moon, and women, and the home, you see. And then five comes along and you have the pentagram or the pentagon. And you see, in the pentagram, you have Fibonacci ratios everywhere. And this is the golden section, you see. And this is the house of pleasure and joy, Leo, number five.
Hmm.
Yeah, you see, because the lion is proud and joyful and it trines with Aries. So the two fire signs speak to each other and see each other and look at each other and strengthen each other. So you've got I am strengthening I will. And this is why pleasure occurs in this house, because of the beautiful golden ratio, which comes from five. Five is the quintessential number. Remember, quintessence means the essence of five. And if you look at the number five, it's written F-I-V-E. F-I is short for phi, the Fibonacci golden section.
Yeah.
V is the Roman letter for the number five, and E is the fifth letter of the alphabet.
Wow, look at that. That's really good stuff. Now, I mean, so this is, we're getting this in English today. And so did they know this when they were creating the English language? Someone really, really clever is going to be behind this, right?
Well, you see, this is the trick. English is older than we think. The Crux Ansata of the Egyptians, the Ankh, is what inspired the Anglican culture and the Anglican language. The English comes from Ankh,
yeah.
You see. It's more related to Hebrew and Egyptian than any other language on the planet. This is the astrotheological language par excellence, bar none.
Wow.
You know, and I can do this. I can do this in Latin. I can do it in French. I can do it in Spanish, Portuguese, and Italian, and it's doable. But nothing comparable to the English language. We have the greatest gift to mankind in this language because it goes back, way, way back. And the guys that conspired to build this language from other languages have done a masterpiece.
They really have, haven't they?
Yes.
Who are we talking about here? Dee, Bacon, are we talking about Shakespeare? Who's been involved in like refining the English to what we have it currently existing today as?
Yeah, and throw in the Jesuits in the College of English in Rome over the last hundreds of years. They've been tampering with the language, and they virtually made it the way it is, you see. And the reason being is for there to exist a legal language, a derivative of English called legalese. And the Bar Association, the British Accredited Registry, these are the people who own this language. It's their copyrighted intellectual property. And they use it, they superimpose it in our culture over the English language without the sheeple knowing. And so we have this language which sounds similar. You see, when they tell you in their summonses, for instance, they tell you, you know, you may do this or you may do that. That means you must. And when they ask you, do you understand? They're not asking you whether you comprehend. They're asking you whether you stand under their jurisdiction.
Yeah.
And they have made this for the purpose of enslavement. So the spelling of English spelling as in casting magic spells,
yep,
was placed in this language for the purpose of controlling mankind. And this is why English has been pushed as the universal language for the modern times, because it's good for liberating and it is good for enslaving. It has both features. Everything is a double-edged sword.
It is.
Everything.
Yeah. Now, we're going to take a break here in a minute or so. I want to ask you a bit more about your website, some of the new videos you have up there, and some other things. But quickly here, though, before we do that, what was Latin in all of this? Is this another language invented by the church, the Jesuits? And that seems to have kind of fallen out of favor, although they still use it, I think, to a certain degree. Was that like a failed experiment? Was English just more powerful? It came onto the scene later? Or how would you explain Latin in all of this?
Well, Latin is, like they say, it's a dead language. You see, officially it's a dead language, but it's very, very alive. They've threaded it in through all the other languages of Europe. They've made sure that those 26 letters of that alphabet go forth throughout the planet, everywhere, simultaneously around the world. When people are punching their iMac or PC keyboards, they are pressing the Roman alphabet, the Latin language, you see.
That's right.
So, yeah, so Rome has done this. So English is a language unto itself, but it derives mostly from Latin, you see, probably 50 or 60% Latin. So, but it itself was an invented language from other more previous languages, older languages. They borrowed a lot from the Phoenicians, you see. The Phoenicians were the language experts, and this is where we get phonetics from. But they also had a phony Phoenician purpose and agenda behind their languages, you see. These are intellectual property, and they belong to these people so that they can manipulate them and use them and spellbind people. That's what languages do. And it's quite easy to do. You basically just keep people in ignorance, and legally you change the meaning in your definition books, and people don't like to do a lot of reading, so they go along blindly, and people are being hoodwinked every day in the media, in the courts, in church. So in church they tell you that you're there for the truth, and you are. You see, they don't tell you that you're there for truth. They tell you the truth, because you see, they're qualifying the specific version of their truth that they want to shove down your neck. You see? So they want you to have their version of the truth. That's why, for instance, when I was a Jehovah's Witness for 22 years, I was going around saying that I was in the truth. You see, because the governing body of the Jehovah's Witnesses, they're no dum-dums. They are very, very clever lawyers. They know about legalese. Yeah, and so do the other governing bodies of the Mormons, the Seventh-day Adventists, the Southern Baptists, the Northern Baptists, the Eastern this and the Western that, and all these Christian denominations.
Yeah.
They all have governing bodies, and those governing bodies have checkbooks that come from Chase Manhattan and J.P. Morgan and B'nai B'rith and the elite families that give them the money and keep these churches going, because they need people to be in the kingdom of dumb, Christendom.
I mean, it's the, someone said the printing press was a mighty fine engine of dissemination of disinformation or ignorance at the same time as it was also very much frowned upon, as we understand now, when the Gutenberg press came on the scene, because this was also an opportunity for regular people to get a hold of this text that we've been talking about and potentially, you know, maybe finding some of this out. That's why they maybe were trying to prevent this for such a long time. Now, they couldn't hold that back, of course, but I think in overall, there wasn't much esoteric wisdom really incorporated into or passed down onto people generally. there was a study of the literal and the exoteric messages in the Bible as opposed to the esoteric. But who knows? Maybe some people got it. Maybe some people did get enlightened by reading this text, Santos. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what Leonardo da Vinci did, you see. That's what Thomas H. Burgoyne did, who wrote the beautiful Light of Egypt, Volume 1 and Volume 2, in which he exposed most of this stuff that I'm teaching today, you see?
Yeah.
If these guys weren't around, if they didn't do their studies, we wouldn't have as much information as we have preserved today, because the churches would quite happily have mankind linger in ignorance for the rest of eternity. You know, they're not interested in us becoming enlightened. Enlightenment comes from when we return that beautiful fluid back to Aries the Lamb and reignite all those dormant brain cells in heaven. You see, when we pray from the cerebellum, the bellicose brain, up to God, Aries the Ram, Abraham. You see, and all the characters are there, man. I mean, I can go through all the other I can go through all the other signs.
Well, why don't we do that a little bit more in the next hour? I just so much more to ask you about. This is some incredible knowledge that you're sharing with us here, Santos, and it's very exciting, and I'm looking forward to continue.
Sure.
Now, in the meantime here, though, before we take a break here, tell us about UniversalTruthSchool.com, your website, and the presentations and, of course, the videos that you have available there as well.
Yeah, well, that's where I have all my information and contacts on Universal Truth School, and you'll have links there to my YouTube page with my free presentations there, where I explain this holy science, the Priscoteologia, and there are 3-hour lessons. There must be 17, 18 videos of 3-hour lessons, and they all contain unique information, gems that I've uncovered that are not repeated in all the videos. I always say to people, please watch all of the videos before you write to me, because every question will be answered. You know, I've touched on all subjects: numerology, Kabbalah, tarot, the lot. It's all there.
Yeah. All right. Really good. UniversalTruthSchool.com. That is Santos Bonacci's website. Go on over there and check out the videos, and the YouTube channel is linked up there as well. Very good stuff. Really incredible information. We'll continue talking more about this in the next hour, so do stay with us. We'll be right back. our Red Eyes members, Santos is going to detail the aspects of each sign in the zodiac and their correspondences to seasons, numbers, yuga cycles, personality, and the body, and all of creation. Santos explains in more detail how the macrocosm, or the heavens, affects its counterparts on Earth, the microcosm. He says the wise man knows his stars. If you want to hear more and learn more, please consider signing up for a membership with us and get full access to the archives. We have over a year of radio for you, available for free on the website. You can stream or download. Subscribe to our RSS feeds as well. We have no commercial interruptions, no blinking website banners, and more importantly, no network censorship. We go where we want, when we want, and how we want to seek the answers to many of the questions that we have about life, reality, and the mysteries. And we do this together with you, and we hope you can learn something new in this process and discover new research, material, new ideas, and basically things that you can go deeper into yourself when you're ready and if you're interested. Take what you can and what speaks to you and build on that. Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Don't shoot the messenger. Thank them for enlightening you about what you agree or disagree with. It's all opportunities to learn and to grow. When you want more, go to redeyesmembers.com. Next up on Red Eyes Radio, we have Joseph Atwill with Fritz Heid and Niola Sparkis on their documentary Caesar's Messiah, the Roman Conspiracy to Invent Jesus. Radio 314 has next up Simon G. Powell on the psilocybin solution. And then following this on Red Eyes Radio, we have Larkin Rose, Douglas Dietrich, Katie Diolos, Sterling Seagrave, Barbara Oakley, Paul Hellier, and Mark Gaffney, to name a few. Listen, when you want and how you want, we've tried to make it as easy as possible for you to access our material on whatever computer or device you're on. More coming up now with Santos Bonacci, Hour 2. Stay with us.